You're listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves.
Welcome to Atlanta Baseball Talk, show number 379 and our 10th full season of the podcast. Today is Sunday, August 13th, 2017, and my name is Steve. I'm joined by both Hammy and Kurt. And folks, before we start the show, please help us out by giving us a review on iTunes and spreading the word about the podcast any way that you want. It would really be a big help to us. All right, guys, in tonight's show, we'll discuss Camargo's injury, Dansby's unexpected return from AAA, and Acuna's numbers from the week. But first, our sit-down with Eric Cole, the minor league editor for Talking Chop and co-founder of the Road to Atlanta podcast, right after this quick break. Eric, how you doing tonight? Great to have you on the show.
Great to be here, man. I'm doing good. How are you?
Yeah, doing fine. So look, we're here to talk the farm system for the Braves, and you know, we'll get to Ozzie and we'll get to Acuna later on. But I want to start at some of the positions and, you know, what the future holds in your mind. And let's start with catcher, right? The unbelievable surprise from Flowers and Suzuki this year is great. And I don't know what the front office is planning for next year, but to count on it seems silly. But, you know, the Brett Cumberlands and Alex Jacksons, they seem a bit far away. Is there catching help coming in 19, maybe?
I could see that happening. The thing with Brett Cumberland and Alex Jackson specifically is that it's unclear as to whether or not they're actually going to be able to stick behind the plate. They both have made big improvements this year. And, you know, in talking to some of the pitchers that they've worked with, I'm not hearing things that make you think, oh, wow, this isn't a guy that's going to be catching when he gets to the majors. They're both bat-first guys, I would guess I would call them. But, I mean, both Brett and Alex, like, multiple of their pitchers have said, hey, he calls a good game, he's making improvements. You know, in Alex Jackson's case, he seems like, you know, when he receives the ball, his glove will not move. He really can stick a pitch. And with Brett, he's working really well with the staffs, too, and he seems like his pitchers seem to feel like they're better when he's behind the plate. So there's things to like there, and I wouldn't say that those guys are going to be necessarily in the majors next year. I mean, Alex Jackson just got promoted to AA, and he's been struggling a little bit at the plate there. Brett Cumberland's kind of like a delightfully weird sort of hitting prospect where he hits a million fly balls, and, you know, when he gets hot, he looks like the best hitter in the minors, and when he's not, he's not. So I think the earliest that we would see anyone that in terms of behind the plate would be 2019, so it may behoove the Braves to maybe extend Flowers for, you know, like keep him around for another year or so. A guy that I really like, he's actually down in rookie ball, and that's William Contreras. It's the brother of Wilson Contreras from the Cubs. He has been really, really good down in rookie ball. They really like the way he looks behind the plate, and more importantly, he's hitting the cover off the ball. He's probably been one of the better hitters on that Danville team, and that Danville team is also loaded with hitting prospects too, and he's probably been one of the better ones. So in terms of catching help, I wouldn't imagine anyone coming out of the minors until at least 2019, but I'm not even sure if those guys are going to be the ones who are going to be sticking behind the plate, whereas I think Contreras can.
And the catcher, the Talking Chop midseason rankings had lowest 27 in the system was Lucas Herbert. Is he going to be part of the conversation?
I love Lucas defensively. I mean, he has really good pop times, has a strong and accurate arm. And for 2 years now, if there's been one guy who's been like talked up in terms of pitching staffs that really like working with him, it is Lucas. His bat is just – it's so streaky, and I don't really know how well it's going to play in the upper levels because he certainly made improvements this year. Last year was kind of a lost year for him. You know, when he was in rookie ball, he hurt his knee, and so he didn't really get to play in rookie ball. And then last year, he was really overmatched. This year, he's looked better. I just don't know how well his bat's going to play going forward. I like him a lot still. And if he figures, even if a league average bat, his defense is good enough, especially with his ability to call games, is so advanced this early on. I would not be surprised if he ends up being higher by the end of the year. But at the same time, you know, I am a little skeptical as to whether or not the bat's going to play, you know, kind of going forward in a sort of consistent way.
And one last thing on Cumberland, it would be a travesty not to get his mustache up in the majors. So I hope.
Yeah, It's majestic. It's sometimes shaved, but he's a really great guy. He's not really active on social media, but he's aware of everything that's going on. I actually talked to him the other day. I was asking him about, because he's been hit by pitches like 36, 37 times this year. And I asked him a little bit about that, and it's kind of funny is that, you know, because he moves his hand so much pre-swing, he thinks that pitchers, when he's down in the count, like, you know, 1-2 or 0-2, they like to try to bust him in, and he just doesn't move. So when they're trying to bust him in, he'll just take a pitch no problem. And I think that most of his hit-by-pitches have been with two strikes, so it's kind of this weird superpower he has to basically be a baseball magnet. But, you know, between that and his mustache, you know, get the guy in the major somehow. Put him where you ever need to have him.
All right, let's move on to the infield, you know, particularly second base. Look, there's obviously a lot of scenarios for next year between Dansby and Ozzie and Camargo, but third base certainly remains a question, at least. The guys like Austin Riley, Travis DeMeritt, what futures do you see for these guys over the next year or two?
Okay, we'll start kind of towards the top of the minors and work our way down. Rio Ruiz, I hate to say give up, because that implies something I don't mean. It's just not the guy that I'm really banking on. You know, he was in the majors. He didn't really perform super well. He has a really iffy minor league track record. You know, I don't think he can not play third base. I just don't know if he's ever really going to hit at the majors.
Well, it's funny you say that, because when right after the trade deadline, when the Freddie at third experiment ended, the comments out of the front office, just it was as if Rio Ruiz didn't exist. You know, as if they've given up on him too.
You know, it's a tough thing. He can't hit lefties. He hasn't really hit righties particularly consistently. You know, he's only been able to put spurts together, right? He had a pretty decent year at AAA last year, but even that, if you kind of look at it, it was very streaky. Had a really bad AA stint before that. And then this year, again, it's been really streaky. You'll have like these 2 week stints where he's, you know, hitting home runs, hitting for average, can hit lefties or righties. But for the most part, what happens is, you know, he can be an easy out, especially against lefties. And, you know, he hits these slow rollers to second base, and that's just not going to get it done for a guy who's not a speedy guy. He has some power and he has some ability. You see talent there, but it doesn't show up enough in games. And when you have admittedly a small sample size of work in the major leagues where he has only been, you know, at best okay, and then a track record in the minor leagues that isn't particularly good, you know, it's hard to kind of bank on him going forward. Austin Riley is an interesting player because he had a really good second half at Rome last year, like was probably one of the better hitters in the South Atlantic League in the second half last year. This year has been kind of like has been quietly very productive. The power has been it's almost like the home runs have been there, but like the doubles haven't, if that makes any sense. Like he's just like the power has been a little more inconsistent, but at the same time, it seems like he's making improvements with strikeouts. He needs to probably make some more improvements in getting on base more, but there's real raw power there. And if he can kind of figure out what his approach is going to be on a night-to-night basis and how to produce in games, he's made big, big strides at third base. When he was at Rome last year, his footwork is not good. It's almost like he could charge balls, but he couldn't make the throw when he needed to, or, you know, he would kind of like make a bad charge or make a bad move left to his right, but then have a really strong throw. He couldn't really put it together to make good plays beyond the routine ones. And this year, you know, he's making plays with his left and his right. He's charging balls better, and his arm is getting a lot more accurate. So I like what he can be, but he's still a project. You know, he's still a guy that's going to strike out a good bit. He needs to walk more, but he's making improvements and, you know, doing well enough and having the player development guys think enough of your play in high A to pump you up to double A in the middle of the season. That's not nothing. And he hasn't seemed to overmatch at Mississippi. So he's an exciting guy. Beyond that, when you get into the lower minors, it gets a little bit trickier as to kind of who you think is going to be there, because, you know, we have Travis DeMeritt, who has looked lost at the plate the second half. He's just striking out a lot, but he could play second or short or third. He really could play just in terms of the field, you know, assuming he can stop, you know, trying to think he can do too much and make these, you know, these dumb throwing errors. He could be a really gifted defensive player, but if he can't figure it out at the plate, you know, I'm not sure where he really profiles. And the lower minors, you know, there's a lot of guys who could be interesting. You know, you don't really know if Kevin Maiton is going to move over to third, to short. You know, there's guys like Giancarlo Encarnacion, who's kind of this under-the-radar sort of international signing who's been really hitting the cover off the ball this year for down in rookie ball. You know, there's some interesting guys, but they're hard to project, and they're more projects right now in the field than anything else. So in terms of third base, you know, I would probably look at Austin Riley. And after that, you kind of have to think maybe we need to get some more help over there or kind of make some decisions on some guys who could really play all over the infield.
Eric, do you believe in Camargo?
No, and I want
– I'm
I
worried
want,
that the front office believes in him too much too.
Look, you know, before he was in Double A, this is a guy who didn't hit for – really much of anything. He was strictly a singles hitter with a strong arm, and even with a strong arm didn't really play the field as well as I think that some people think he was playing. You know, he just had a really strong arm, so could kind of make up for mistakes that he made. Then in Double A he started hitting all these doubles, and I was kind of, you know, clearly he had bulked up, but I still didn't see a guy with an approach at the plate that made me think that he would be able to either outperform, you know, BABIP type streaks, you know, and, you know, like really be able to do much beyond, you know, being streaky at times. And that's kind of what we've seen. You know, for that first month, he was hitting really well because everything that he hit would either drop in or find a hole. And now he's not really doing that, but he has a strong arm. So, and more importantly, they feel like they kind of have to do something because Dansby has been underperforming and, you know, had to spend the time in Gwinnett. Now he's back up again. I am not a believer in Camargo. I don't think he's going to hit enough. What I like for him as a role is what we thought Jace Peterson, what we hoped Jace Peterson would be, I guess is the best way to say it. It's kind of like a super utility guy. You can play him at third, you can play him at second, you can play him at short. You could probably put him in the corner outfield spots if you really needed to, and he won't embarrass you out there. He might make good plays, give guys days off, and when he's coming off the bench to hit, you know, he's certainly not a bad hitter. I just don't think he's a particularly good one. So I see him as like a bench utility guy, just not the, you know, a starting player. But I'm a little worried, like you are, that the Braves seem to think that they have something special there, and I'm just not sure that they do.
Yeah, I think they are penciling him in for like third base opening day next year. That's really my fear.
When you have a third baseman, and if, you know, if Camargo hits 10 home runs in any given year, that would be, I would probably take the under on that.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's not where you want to be. He's not that much of a plus defender. He will make plus plays from time to time, but he'll also make, you know, kind of dumb mistakes or sail throws. And I don't think he's going to be able to, he's not going to hit for the kind of average that, you know, especially when he first came up, he's not going to hit like that. He's just not going to. And that's not a net positive for your team. If you can, what they need to do is make a move, either make a move for a guy that can be, have more offensive upside, or even more defensive upside. I would think that offensive upside is probably more likely to get on the trade market, and as opposed to penciling him in, because I understand the appeal of having a guy like that who can be good. But again, I kind of like that guy as more of a bench utility guy where you can say, you know what, let's give Ozzie a day off, or let's give this guy a day off, and you can put him in there and he's not going to embarrass you at the plate or in the field.
The Sean Rodriguez that we were getting.
Well, I thought that's one of the reasons why we were trading away Sean Rodriguez, is because you have Johan Camargo. He's that guy, right? You know, or Jace Peterson. The Jace Peterson doesn't really have as much of a role in this team because Camargo does those things. What I don't want to see is having him start just for the sake of starting because he's cheap and he had a good 3 weeks.
Yeah.
That's just me.
All right. Let's move to the outfield, to guys not named Acuna. How much of a shot do you give Dustin Peterson? Let's start there.
He's a hard guy to pencil. He's kind of a hard guy to pin down right now because when you hurt your wrist, one of the last things to really come back is the power and your timing and to really being able to time up on square balls. He's looked fine at Gwinnett. I don't think he's looked bad, but I don't think he's looked like he did in Double A last year, where you really saw those doubles and those home runs really starting to pile up at a park that they don't really pile up at. So I don't want to – I could see him as like a bench outfielder right now, but, you know, there's more upside than that there. I don't know if he can play – right now, it's almost like he would profile as like a Nick Markakis type wherever you played him, because I don't think he doesn't have a ton of a defensive upside, but he's more athletic than you think he is out there. And I think that there's more – his line from this year is not indicative of the player he is. I think he's a little bit better than that. I just don't think he's a lot better than that. So, you know, maybe that's a bench outfielder, or maybe that's a starting left or a right fielder on a team that doesn't exactly have playoff ambitions. I don't know. I've always been a little bit lower on Dustin's because I just don't think that his offensive upside is particularly high. I just think he's a good hitter and can play the outfield in the corner okay. I don't think his arm's particularly strong. I don't think his range is great. I don't think it's bad. You know, it's just kind of – I haven't been as high on him as maybe some other people were. I just think that he's kind of a guy that will hit like, you know, might hit 260, 270 pretty regularly, be kind of like a slightly above average league hitter, but that's pretty much it.
And any other help on the way in the short term?
In the short term, go through in my head really quick. I mean, other than Ronald Acuna, who we could spend, you know, an entire podcast talking about, the position players, they're looking a little further away. We have Christian Pache down in Rome. He's a couple years away. He seems like he's tired a little bit, but defensively, he is a plus defensive center fielder right now. He has a strong arm, really good range, really good route running and instincts out there. Ray Patrick Ditter is a guy that I really like. He's currently in Florida at High A. Really, really strong arm, can play all three positions in the outfield. I think he would perform. He could perform really, really well. If he can get a little bit better at the plate, but he's super, super fast and there's upside there. And in terms of like a defensive replacement type guy, he could do that right now. But beyond that, the outfield help, it's going to be a little further away with guys like, you know, Christian Pache, or even further away, a guy like Drew Waters.
All right, Eric, let's move on to the absurd amount of pitching in the system.
There's a lot.
Yeah, it's crazy. So is it fair to say that forget Sims and Newcomb for a second, but the possibilities for guys we could see in the rotation next year, does it include and is it limited to Soroka, Allard, and Gohara?
Those three are certainly at the top of the list. You know, Patrick Weigel, I think, was going to be in line with like that Newcomb and Sims.
Yeah, we would have seen him Thomas this Johnson. Year.
Yeah, I think I could have very easily seen him this year. It depends on his rehab goes. We were actually in Florida last month, and I managed to run into Weigel and talk to him a little bit. It seems like his rehab is going really well. If he can come back, you know, pretty early next year, you know, like, you know, maybe before the All-Star break, and I'm not going to say that's going to happen, but just, you know, I could see him kind of being in that conversation. Soroka, Allard, and Johara are the three guys who are the most likely to see rotation spots next year. Max Fried is in that discussion.
Right. Yeah. I forgot about him.
Yeah. Well, it's weird, right? Because he hasn't had a particularly great year. It took some time on the DL to kind of fix some blister issues. And I think he might've had some lingering other minor injury issues, came back and seemed to be pitching reasonably well. And then they threw him right into the major league bullpen. So those are four guys that I could see battling for rotation spots. And don't sleep on Tuki Toussaint either, because he was a guy that kind of had to repeat at Rome and now has been pitching really, really well, you know, really finding the strike zone more, kind of getting a little bit unlucky in terms of, you know, like, you know, you don't see guys like giving up the BABIP type luck, you know, and put up good runs, but at the same time still getting strikeouts and things like that. So he's gotten a little bit unlucky on some home runs, I think, but in terms of just statistically, but he's looked a lot better. His curveball is still fantastic, and he's spotting his fastball really well. So he's a guy that maybe has an outside shot. But I think that those four guys that we've already mentioned, Mike, Soroka, Allard, Johara, and Fried are kind of going to begin battling for those rotation spots.
Who do you like the best out of that group of four or five?
I like them all a lot. And I want to preface it by saying that because I feel like I'm having to pick my favorite kid. But for those who aren't aware of my leanings, it's going to be Mike Soroka. I think he's the best pitching prospect in the system. He's a guy that gets unfairly knocked, I think, for not having as good a stuff as some of the other guys. He's right there with him. The problem is he doesn't throw 98. But his fastball hits 93, 95, and that'll play, and he can throw it wherever he wants to. Has a two-seamer that's more like a sinker. It throws it a little bit softer than that, maybe like, you know, like 91 to 94 is generally where that pitch – maybe 91, 93 is probably a more fair. But it's a really good kind of sinking fastball, and his four-seam can touch the mid-90s. His breaking ball has two planes of movement, and if you see this thing move, you don't think of that as like that's only an above-average breaking ball. I mean, that's a plus breaking ball.
Yeah.
When they were, I believe it was MLB Pipeline, I can't remember 100, but they were rating tools for the Futures game on the world team. You know who had the best graded breaking ball on that team? It was Mike Soroka, and that world Futures team was loaded. So his breaking ball is really good. His changeup's gotten a full grade better this year. He's just turned 20 years old, and he's been dominating Double-A like he's, you know, like he's a veteran that's on a rehab assignment. You can't really hit home runs off of him. He doesn't give up walks. He's been striking out batters especially when his breaking ball is on. He's striking out batters at a better clip. He does everything that you want to do. He throws strikes. He gets guys. When he doesn't have his pitches or his best stuff, he still gets outs. He can still get ground balls when he wants to. He's probably my favorite pitcher in the system, and I think he's the best pitching prospect in the system as well. If I had to pick a close second, it would probably be Johara, because I think his slider is so good that even if starting doesn't work out, he could end up being like a shutdown reliever. So, his floor in that regard is, higher than most. So if I'm having to pick two, I would say Soroka then Johara.
And what about 19? Is it possible we see guys like Wentz or Wilson? I was thinking Tukey more for 19, but I mean, is that about right?
I think so. Wentz and Wilson have been really, really good. Wentz in particular has been getting a lot more buzz, I think, because the second half he's really been dominating. But don't sleep on Bryce Wilson either, because he was a guy before the draft that was knocked as not having that third pitch, not having a changeup. Because he was, he was kind of a two-star player, a two-sport player, didn't really have to throw a changeup because he was throwing 93, 94 in high school, so he could just, blow that by guys. But all he has done is made improvements this year, and he had a game where he threw a nine-inning complete game shutout, and in the ninth inning, he was still throwing 95, 96. That's not a guy who's a reliever down the road. Right. They've cleaned up his delivery. He really can play. I want to see how these guys in their full season finish a year before I start trying to project them, because with guys drafted out of high school, that first full season where they're throwing 100-120 innings, something like that, that's a long year for a guy, especially who hasn't thrown anywhere close to that amount of innings and really having to perform well down the line. And for guys like Wilson, who really haven't thrown that many innings, or Wentz in particular, who've had problems with dead arm issues in the past, I want to see how they finish a full season before I start saying, hey, this is going to be a guy that I think is going to be a starter, maybe not next year, but the year after. But I think you hit it right on the head with those two guys, because Wentz, and don't sleep on Kyle Wright either, even for 2018. I think it's more likely to be 2019, but he's a guy that, he's going to move fast. He has a track record of college performance, and he's really, really good. They're managing his innings next year, and I think they're going to push him hard next year.
All right, let's move up to 1 and 2 in the system, Eric, and we'll start with Ozzie. How excited are you for the Ozzie era? How good do you think it can be?
I love watching Ozzie play baseball. He's a super high-energy player. He is a lot stronger than you think he is. So when he puts a charge in the ball, it kind of like gets you going and can hit from both sides of the plate. He's a great base runner. He's super fast. He'll steal bases. He'll take extra bases, which is kind of, I think, an underrated thing for a lot of guys, is that, if a guy doesn't steal 50 bases, he's not considered fast. But Ozzie will go first to third on a lot of pitches. On a lot of hits, and he'll take extra bases when he doesn't have any right to, and will hit a lot more doubles and triples than you think. And he has power from both sides of the plate. I think he has more power from when he's hitting right-handed, but left-handed, once he kind of got his swing back in order from the kind of a freak elbow injury at the end of last year, we kind of sheared off the tip of it. I think that he wasn't really driving the ball as well to start the year from the left side, but I think that's coming back. And when he hits the ball, it's just, the ball sounds just a little bit different coming off his bat. I'm not saying he's going to be, a 30 home run guy, but I think that he hits the ball hard and hits these hard line drives that can do a lot of damage and get by the outfielders and kind of roll to the wall. And when he's on base, when he's just on the field in general, he makes things happen. Is he going to be, a Carlos Correa type where, he hits a bunch of home runs and, is a full five tools? Maybe not. But when he's on the field, he makes good plays, makes things happen. And it's clear, despite his really young age, he really knows how to play the game of baseball and has all the right instincts. And he's just a ton of fun to watch.
Yeah, and has not looked overmatched. I mean, I know he's not put up huge numbers with the bat yet. But he doesn't look overmatched. He looks really confident at the plate.
He's not like striking out three times a game. He hits some balls at some guys, or some balls in fine holes, or it's a small sample size. I mean, he hasn't been up in the majors that long. He already has two home runs. I don't think anyone would have projected him that from doing that. You know what I mean? So there's a lot to like to what he's doing. And once he kind of, those balls start dropping and, starts me drawing a few more walks here and there, you'll see what the Ozzie is. And he probably has the best hit tool in the minors. So I imagine that'll even itself out.
All right. And so, saving the best for last, let's talk about Ronald Acuna. I'm already missing checking the box score in Gwinnett and seeing the 2 to 3 hits every night. Like, just the thought of him coming up, I've enjoyed so much following him on the MILB app. So surely he's on the opening day roster next year, right?
I don't think you move him this quickly. Really? I don't think you move him this quickly if you're not going to do that.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? You don't move him from high A to triple A to keep him at triple A all year next year. That doesn't make any sense to me at all. But yeah, no, I think you're right. I think he's going to be on the opening day roster. It's just finding a spot for him. They're going to have to shed to Markakis or Kemp, you know, and that's I think that of the two, it's probably easier to move Markakis, but at the same time, you know, there's a lot of people in that organization that seem to really like the professionalism that Markakis brings to the team and kind of being able to teach the young guys how to do things the right way. And I understand that, but I mean, Markakis is not going to be anywhere. I mean, I think Acuña is just going to be vastly more productive defensively and offensively than Markakis. So,
well, and, yeah. And the, you know, not only the fact of the dollars with Markakis, but you would rather have Acuña's arm in right than in left.
Yep. Well, and his range. I mean, Markakis will catch things that are hit right at him, and he won't mess up those routine plays. But he's not making not making plays that he's not supposed to. You know what I mean? He's not going to show up in the Statcast highlights. Let me put it that way. He's kind of a statue out there, and you know, there's a value to a guy that you know won't mess up anything. But at the same time, you want to be able to get value defensively from a player, and you know, Acuña is going to give that. Acuña has the arm, and he has the range, has the speed, and he's going to have more upside at the plate. So I think it's kind of a no-brainer. I think he'd be probably a better, or he would certainly put up better metrics than Matt Kemp would as well. So you know, it's but moving either one of those guys are non-trivial concerns. So I don't really know what the Braves do there beyond you know doing some weird rotation thing. Unless they can move one of those guys. So it's a tough thing, but I think that, I mean, as quickly as he's moved Acuña and how well he's performed at each stop, I mean, he's going to be on the opening day roster unless something really weird happens.
Yeah, and it's really been remarkable. And I remember back to spring training and Acuña being there and Chipper's comments about, oh, he reminds me of Andrew. And, you know, I remember thinking, not knowing that much about Acuña, thinking, Yeah, ball player hyperbole. They're, you know, he's a guy from the islands, and Chipper is just sort of being Chipper. But the fact that he has really only gotten better at each stop as they've moved him along, all at 19, it's really just been incredible to watch.
I'm going to be honest. I really hate the Andrew Jones comps. I think you're right. It's kind of hyperbole. Like you're just saying stuff to say stuff, and I think it undersells both guys. You know what I mean? Because Acuña is a different player than Andrew Jones, and I think that it seems like a easy way to explain a guy. Like, oh wow, he's moving fast, and you know he happens to be an international signee, so he's Andrew Jones. Right. And you know, first of all, Andrew Jones is like a borderline Hall of Fame caliber player. You know, I think he should be in the Hall of Fame. And, you know, putting that on Acuña, it doesn't seem very fair. And more importantly, like that they don't really have the same games that they I don't see the comparison, I guess, as easily as others do, because I mean, like Andrew Jones was already like a super gifted, you know, climbing up the center field wall, rangy type center fielder when he was in the minors, whereas Acuña is more known for his arm and more of his all-around offensive game, whereas Andrew's, you know, he had this special power and he had this special defensive ability. So I don't know. I don't really see it. At the same time, like, it's certainly nice to be compared to a guy like Andrew Jones who was in the minors, you know what I mean? But, I mean, it's easy to forget how good Andrew was. I mean, he hit, like, 36 home runs the year that he got promoted in double A. You know, and Acuña hasn't done that. Does he have that ability, that upside? Sure. I think that Acuña has like special in-game power that I don't think shows up all the time, because I think he also tries to hit line drives. I think he tries to, you know, put the ball in play and do other things with pitches that Andrew maybe didn't.
Yeah.
But I also think maybe Andrew was maybe a little more of a gifted player, but that's not underselling Acuña. If I say that Andrew Jones is better than Ronald Acuña, that doesn't mean Ronald Acuña is a bad baseball player. You know, it's I don't know. I really hate those kinds of comps because I feel like they're a little lazy.
Yeah.
I think that people go, oh wow, he's really good, therefore he's Andrew Jones because he plays center. He does happen to play center field. I don't think Ronald Acuña is going to be playing much center field for the Atlanta Braves, because right. Ender Inciarte has that job and he has earned it. So you know, just appreciate Acuña for what he is and all the things that he does that he brings to the field. I think if he's not the best prospect in baseball right now, he's certainly in the top five, and you know that's. That's an amazing thing, considering that, you know, there were not that many of us before this season kind of got going that realized just how good he could be and how good he was.
Well, and as a Braves fan, to have a position player in the minors that highly regarded and that talented, right? We've gotten used to, over the last couple of years at least, with the rebuild, pitching. And as, you know, the last couple drafts passed, and as the Braves kept taking pitchers, you know, with the first couple picks, it's like, yeah, pitching. What about the position players? For this guy to ascend like he has this year, I mean, it's just so exciting for next year. I really can't wait for the Acuna era to begin.
Well, it's frustrating for me because all of us, several of us from Talking Chop, we went to Rome last year for the home opening weekend for a couple games there. And Acuna was the best player on the field by a mile.
Mm.
And we fell in love right away, but he hurt his thumb. And it stinks because we lost like 2 or 3 months of him playing. And if he had been playing and has kept doing what he had been doing, this would have already kind of gotten started. And everyone could have gotten even more excitement would have been building. But, you know, injuries happen. And it was kind of a fluke thing on a slide. So, you know, things happen. But it's really been fun to watch. He's such a fun player. He hits these balls and you're like, I think that ball has a chance of going out. When it first gets hit, you're like, oh, that's a routine fly ball. And then you realize just how strong this kid is and how much he can get done when he's on the baseball field. He's just an exciting guy.
And fast on the base paths, too. I was at Gwinnett a couple weeks ago, saw him in person for the first time.
He's
and my
fast.
God, he can fly.
Yeah, he is a very – a really quick first step, too. So, like, you know, even on, like, routine infield grounders – you better have your wits about you if you're in the infield because he'll take first, you know, he's super exciting. I wish he wasn't quite as aggressive at times because I've been thinking sometimes he thinks he can do anything and it's close, but he can't do anything. And, you know, he gets caught stealing sometimes in situations where I don't think he necessarily should have been running, but, you know, let a young guy figure that out. Let him figure out what his limitations are. And as it turns out in Acuna, there's not particularly many of them.
All right, folks, catch Eric all the time at Talking Chop and on the Road to Atlanta podcast and on Twitter as well. Eric, appreciate your time, man. Great talking prospects with you and look forward to talking to you again.
Absolutely, Steve. Thanks for having me.
So, guys, time for headlines and none bigger, of course, than the Braves actually won a game this week.
Woohoo!
No. Okay. But none bigger, obviously, than Johan Camargo's freak accident taking the field before the first game against the Phillies. So first off, insane that his knee wasn't completely shredded, right? Those non-contact injuries where they end up in a heap, I just couldn't believe that it was just a bone bruise.
Yeah.
I mean, great news.
Gruesome and so scary.
So speaking of, have you guys seen the Bryce Harper video from Saturday night? I mean, it is like college basketball bad.
It really bends the way it's not supposed to. Oh, I feel so bad for him. And I really do not care for him as a player, but I feel so bad for him.
Or as a human being, really.
Well,
but awful
I care
to
for
go
his
out
knee.
That way. Yeah. And, you know, so on Sunday morning, the Nationals came out and said, no structural damage, bone bruise, just like Camargo. But they use the phrase significant bone bruise and that they expect him back before the season is over. I was listening to the Sunday radio broadcast of the Braves game and Jim and Don were talking about it. And they said the Nationals are famous for giving sort of, well, this is my words, not theirs.
Greenies.
Inaccurate. Yeah. Oh. No, like inaccurate medical information. So they are not convinced that he's coming back this season, then that it is really only a bone bruise.
They're like the Patriots.
Yeah, exactly. But God, that I mean, I really couldn't believe that it wasn't all just shredded all to hell.
Mm.
All right. So shortly after Camargo fell to the ground, the team pulled Dansby from his game in AAA mid-game. Called him to the big club the following day where he has been the starting shortstop ever since.
Yeah.
So, Ham, what do you think about the front office calling Dansby back much sooner, obviously, than they intended?
So there are – the only other shortstop in Gwinnett is Sean Casmar, and he's not on the 40-man. So Dansby is our guy on the 40-man. So there may be other contractual or other things to get over to actually put a shortstop on the field in the majors, but I don't care.
Well, but I mean, they could have put Danny Santana there.
They could play with eight players. Play with Edgar Renteria. Who cares? See if Fuki is available. That's all I'm saying. Like, I am against it. Dansby's long-term health and success is much better, much more important than any game this season. And I think it's disruptive to do that to him. He's not ready, which is fine. He will be ready. He will be great one day. We need for him to be, but he's just not ready. He is so young. He got lucky early and had a great start, but he's just not ready. We don't need him here now. Let him play where there's less pressure. Let him get more, you know, learn the other parts about being a professional baseball player. Just don't disrupt him like that. It's exactly what happened with Frenchie, right? Frenchie came on young, made the cover of Sports Illustrated, was the next big thing, struggled, got demoted, and then got called back up too soon. And it didn't work out for him. I love Frenchie, but it didn't work out for him. And I'm worried that that could be what happens with Dansby.
Kurt, I know you weren't happy about it. Anything to add?
Well, I mean, I just don't see how this was productive in the long term. They do have Sean Kazmaier. I apologize to Sean's mother. I don't know how to spell say his last name. And I don't know that I should have looked it up. He's a 33-year-old that's still playing in AAA, but he's a shortstop. I mean, as Ham says, this is just a point where you're just logging games in the book at this point. So let him come up and fill some space until you can feel like Dansby has actually had an opportunity to do something at AAA. I mean, he did nothing at AAA. And not only did he do nothing, he had no time to do anything as it was anyway. I mean, he goes down there and he's batting like 220 or something. Not really the point of him sending him down and sort of getting him straightened out and then to bring him right back up here. Quite a line for the four games he's been up here. 125, 125, 125.
He's not ready.
Well, it's been handled poorly from weeks and weeks ago, right? Deciding to sit him didn't make sense. Deciding to sit him and not send him down immediately also didn't make sense. And then bringing him back up, if Dansby's, like you said, if his development is the important thing, bringing him back up didn't make sense. I think they should have just left him where he was and just let him work through it up here. I mean, we talked about this ad nauseum about he's not going to see major league sliders down there and all that. But he had gotten so messed up in the head that send him down and let him get his confidence back. But to bring him back like it's super important for the team, other than what, you know, what? I mean, it's just about ticket sales at this point or something. Stick Danny Santana there. It doesn't matter. They really have fouled this up for weeks and weeks and weeks.
And so is he sent back down when Camargo comes back?
Well, that will be very interesting, right? that would make it even worse. I can't imagine that they do that. I just cannot imagine that. But it has really been handled poorly. And really what we can hope for is that Dansby gets some luck up here. I mean, he did hit the ball hard this week. It was a lot more of that, you know, hitting them to where they are stuff. But hopefully he just starts to get some balls to drop and gets lucky and starts to feel good and starts to turn it around up here. But my God, I hope they don't send him back down.
No,
now.
They
that
can't.
Would be awful.
They can't.
Awful.
Their bet is made. The bet is made. It's the same thing that happened with Frenchie. He came back up and never got it back together. But they couldn't send him down.
Well, and maybe it's September call-up time by the time Camargo is back and they don't have to confront that. But to a broader point, does he play? I mean, is he back on the bench for the Atlanta Braves when he should be playing every day somewhere, regardless of where it is?
If he stays, he has to play every day.
If he stays, he's got to play every day. He's got to. I just can't see it going any other way. But I wouldn't have predicted some of this stuff either. All right, guys, some quick numbers from the past week. On the Newcomb walks tracker, a much better start for him this past week. He went 6 innings, 2 earned, and only 1 walk. 6 strikeouts in that game as well. And down on the farm, Ronald Acuna continues to hit. Not quite the .500 batting average he had last week, but still 9 for 33, 2 doubles, a triple, a homer, and one of those doubles was Sunday's walk-off extra inning double to win the game. I can't say it enough that I cannot wait for opening day 2018 to see Acuna. All right, guys, next up is Shot in the Dark, but first, a quick break. All right, Shot in the Dark, our predictions for the coming week. And let's start by reviewing how everyone did last week. And we'll start with our listener Shot in the Dark from Chicken Parmesan, who predicted that Max Fried would pitch 5-plus innings with 0 earned runs this week. Fried ended up with 2 appearances this week, totaling 3 innings, where he gave up no earned runs, 2 hits, 3 walks, 2 strikeouts. So I only saw his first appearance where he went 2 innings in that game against the Phillies, and he looked great.
Great.
I thought it was very exciting what he was doing. So nice job on that prediction. Let's see how the three of us did. So, Hammy, you predicted that the starting pitchers would give up 9 earned or less. And you were pretty much done after Tehran's travesty to start the week with his 5, where he gave up 5. So the Braves doubled your prediction up, Hammy.
Yes.
The starters gave up 18 earned runs this week. I mean,
what a terrible week.
Really awful. I mean, when Tehran's bad, when Folty's bad, it's just depressing, particularly Folty. Yeah, ugly, ugly. And you know, they're not hitting. I mean, Sunday's game was better. Obviously, they won, but they also scored 4 runs, and the offense perked up a little bit. But, yeah, the pitching.
And you're 2-10 against the worst team in baseball. The Phillies have earned 26% of their wins on the season from the Braves.
Glad we can help.
Yep.
All right, Curtis, you predicted that Albies would have 8 hits this week. Now, he only ended up with 6, but it was really a much better week at the plate for him. 6 for 18, so 333 batting average. He had a double and his second homer of his young season. And I predicted that the Braves would sweep the 3-game series in St. Louis. Just that close.
Just missed.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so no winners again. No one is on the board for August. So let's see what we can do for this coming week. Hammy, what do you got?
Okay, the starting pitching will give up. We have 7 games this week. The starting pitching will give up 30 or more runs, but the offense will also score over 30 runs.
Okay. All right, Curtis, how about you?
Well, as today, thank what we've been saying all season long, thank God for R.A. Dickey.
Our whole lives, really.
Yes. I am going to do a reverse jinx, as I am so apt to do. Swanson and Albies combined to have fewer than 12 hits this week.
All right, I'm going the opposite side of that one. I've got Dansby hitting over 315 with a home run. All right, folks, don't forget to get your Shot in the Dark in before first pitch on Monday. And if we pick yours, we'll discuss it on next week's show. All right. Let's look to the week ahead. 7 games this week, like you said, Hammy. 4 on the road in Colorado, and then 3 at home with Cincinnati. And here are the pitching matchups. Julio Tehran will start it off facing Mark Bettis, who's making his first start of 17
Brave
after
killer.
Being on the DL. Well, he was on the DL battling testicular cancer. He was that guy on the Rockies.
So
it's his first start. Right. So most importantly, great for him. Great story that he's coming back. From a baseball perspective, a guy making this hugely emotional start against Julio in the thin air of Colorado, it's just going to be a disaster that first game. There's just no doubt. All right, next up is Newcomb facing Antonio Senzatella and his 464. Game 3 in Colorado, Folty versus John Gray and his 492. And the last game against the Rockies, we'll see Lucas Sims face Jeff Hoffman and his 515. All right, so headed home for the Red Series, we'll see Dickey. And like you said, Kurt, in that Sunday finale against the Cardinals, he was brilliant. Just great. I mean, yeah, imagine where the team would be without Dickey this year. So Dickey faces Sal Romano and his 605. Next up will be Tehran in his second start of the week against Asher Wojciechowski and his 423. And then final game of the week, Newcomb's second start. He will face Luis Castillo and his 373. So, Curtis, what do you think? Record this week?
I'm going to go 3 and 4. 1 and 3, 2 and 1.
All right, Hammy.
2 and 5. 1 and 3, ooh. 1 and 2.
I'm going to go 4 and 3. I think they split in Colorado, where we always do well, so why wouldn't I? And take 2 from Cincinnati. Yeah, we don't really do well in Colorado. I don't think that's true.
Since what, like 98 when we went 13-0 in their inaugural season?
Yeah.
All right, folks. On that note, that's the show. Remember, you can find us at Blog Talk Radio, as well as iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And as always, you can find us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com to access past shows and post in our comment section. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk and to like us on Facebook. Thanks again for listening, and go Braves!
Thanks for listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves. To find new shows, to post in our forum, or to send a comment, please visit us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com. Had to admit-